What if we could reimagine the traditional notion of a high flyer? Hey friends, welcome back or welcome to the High Flyers podcast. For the curious ones, where we share diverse experiences in life, not just work, tune in and learn to fly high in your own way, from value creators and problem solvers at all aspects of society. Learn about their sunrise, magic moments, hustle, and so much more to help us all be 1% better every day together. And I'm your host, Vidit Agarwal.
If I rewound kind of 15, 20 years at the start of my career, and what would I spend time doing if my end goal was to start a business, I would optimize for the rate of learning. So I think in a couple of my early jobs, like the first year, probably the first few months working as a lawyer, my first job out of uni, super high rate of learning just because it's my first full-time job, but then the learning slowed down. I found it boring and wanted to leave and do something else. Super cheap auto, as you touched on, I spent 2 years there. I'd say the first year, really high rate of learning working in retail. But then the second year, the rate of learning dropped off. And then, yeah, worked for Google for 2.5 years. I think high rate of learning for the first 18 months, and then that dropped off for the year after that. Whereas Shoes of Prey and now Fable, insanely high rate of learning through all of that, probably a couple of times higher than anything I had working for, the rate of learning that I had working for other people.
That's Michael Fox, and this is episode 55. Second episode of 2022, and in the last one I announced the launch of Curiosity Center. A big thank you for all the messages of support, exciting times ahead, and please check out episode 54 to find out more. Today, Michael and I chat about his sunrise in Broken Hill, New South Wales, with Dad being a mining engineer and Mum a part-time accountant, who went back to uni later on to do a Master's and a PhD. Hear about the importance of optimising for rate of learning, particularly early in your career, as Michael shares his experiences in law, retail, and tech, which then led to founding Shoes of Prey, a women's fashion company which Michael ended up closing after 10 years of operation, which is a big step to make. So I asked Michael about how he kept the trust of his employees, some of whom work with him now at Fable, the importance of systems and routines, particularly in the first 3 months after closing the business. Michael is now the founder and CEO of Fable, providing delicious food that is plant-based and on a mission to reduce industrial animal agriculture, help you live longer, and make the world a better place. You'll hear a number of confronting facts, including one where 95% of Aussies don't get enough fibre in their diet. Incredible. And as a bonus, I asked Michael about his 41-acre property in the Sunshine Coast and his personal interest in social communal living, growing fruit and veg, and more. So enjoy. Michael, welcome to the show. I've heard so many good things about you. Really excited to share your journey with listeners.
Thanks, Vidit. Really excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's start off with some quick facts just to give some perspective to the listener. So where were you born and where do you live now?
Born in Broken Hill in New South Wales and now live on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. My wife and I have got a 41-acre property here and grow a lot of our own food and fruit trees, veggie garden, and yeah, really, really enjoy it here.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, and I'm keen to talk a bit about that in this discussion. And then what was your first job and what do you do now?
First job, 15 years and 9 months at McDonald's in Toowong Village in Brisbane as flipping burgers. I think I got paid $4.75 an hour when I started out there.
Oh, wow.
I guess it's a long time ago. That was minimum wage for a 15-year-old then. Now do a Fable Food Company doing delicious meaty food from mushrooms.
Mm. Yeah, no, and I actually must say I bought some of your product the other day, and it was delicious. I bought both your braised mushrooms that you can cook on the pan and also the on-the-go teriyaki, I think it was.
Oh, yeah,
I had that for lunch yesterday, the new products that you've launched at Coles. There's a new label on the shelf, so I assumed it was recently launched.
Yeah, awesome.
And it was delicious, yeah. And I must say one of my friends, she's been looking for it all over Sydney she's actually driven to 4 supermarkets looking for your park. So I said to her, I'll definitely pass on that feedback to Michael. He's got to get it arranged in every supermarket too.
Yeah, we need to do a little bit better there. We're in all the Harris Farm supermarkets in Sydney, and then we're in about 2/3 of Coles stores around the country. So yeah, if she tries those, she'll be able to find it.
Mm. Cool. And given the name of the show, who's a high flyer in your life that perhaps hasn't got the recognition to date?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say my wife, Katrine. So Katrine studied software engineering, which was, something a little bit not as many women studying software engineering back when she did in Copenhagen in Denmark, where she grew up. Then her most recent role before Fable was head of product at finder.com.au. She was one of the early team members there and built out their product team. And then she now runs marketing for Fable and, very much kind of sits in the background in Fable, but she like publicly, but is a real core key part of the business, particularly on the kind of brand building side. She even came up with the name Fable and everything behind that. And to top it off, she's also an amazing mum to our two kids. We've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and she manages to balance all of that really well.
Love it. Now let's zoom out and go back to your sunrise, your childhood, your early upbringing. And you mentioned Broken Hill, and I know you've spoken about your parents in a few other interviews. Your dad was in mining engineer, I believe. Tell me about that. Like, what are your memories of your environment and your family growing up?
You've done your research for it. That's impressive. my dad was a mining engineer, and I kind of grew up in mining towns. So, he would get a promotion and sort of working. He was only 23 when I was born, so pretty kind of early on in his career. So he would get a kind of promotion every sort of 2, 3, 4 years, and we'd move to another town. So. It was a really, I really enjoyed that upbringing, like living in kind of small towns. We lived in some of the interesting places we lived included Groote Eylandt up in the Northern Territory in the Gulf of Carpentaria. It's like 3,000 people live there, half Aboriginal, half people of European descent. And it was just such an awesome place as a young kid. Yeah, you could kind of jump on your bike as a kid and go off exploring in the bush with your mates and really kind of good outdoor sort of lifestyle. And I think that's what we're sort of trying to replicate in some ways here on the Sunshine Coast. Moving towns every 3 years and kind of having to make new friends at school all the time. I remember as a kid that, like thinking about it now, it kind of feels like that would have been difficult, but I remember being as a kid, it felt normal to me because I didn't know anything different. I don't know if that's carried through into my personality, but I do really enjoy meeting new people and sort of having new experiences, and I've still moved around quite a bit as an adult. I had a great upbringing.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask that environment would give you the self-belief to go into new things, right? In a personal, individual sense, where you probably had to at that young age go into a new environment, figure it out, build a network, and just get on with it. So, would you say that's what it comes down to in terms of? I know we'll speak later on about some of the experiences you've had from a work perspective, but do you think that early upbringing gives you the belief that you can figure it out?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a part, probably a fairly big part of my personality now. I guess it's hard to know whether that stems from nature or nurture, but potentially a combination of both. I guess I have been kind of doing that all my life ever since I was a kid, so that probably makes sense that is what is part of the reason that it's carried through.
And who would you say were your early influences? Was it your parents? Was it other people in the family unit or people at school?
Yeah, I think my parents in a fairly big way. My dad had a good and successful career in the mining industry as a mining engineer. And mum, he had a good career. He always kind of had this yearning ambition to be an entrepreneur. Like I remember him talking about various kind of potential mining businesses he thought about kind of going into and starting and also other businesses outside of the mining space. So I've often reflected on, again, hard to know what influences you, but I've often reflected that his desire to do that is potentially part of the reason why I've gone and done that. And then, for my mum, she was initially an accountant and kind of worked part-time as an accountant while my sisters and I were growing up. And then she went back to my dad passed away from melanoma about 15 years ago. And after that, mum went back to uni and studied nursing and did a master's and PhD. Also found that kind of very inspiring, kind of a really tough thing to go through. Her husband dying when she was, late 40s. She did a really amazing job of kind of going out and reinventing herself and just, doing new things that she might not have done otherwise. And, that was super inspiring to see too.
She sounds like a high flyer in her own right. So
definitely.
And did you have any heroes? Did you have any posters on the wall growing up that people you looked up to outside your environment?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I'd say like a lot of other entrepreneurs. Like I remember reading, probably sort of fairly early on in my career, reading about, reading kind of Richard Branson's book. Must have read that in my early 20s. I remember reading Business Review Weekly. It was kind of like business magazine back when I was sort of finishing university and starting in my career. And I remember reading lots about Mike Cannon-Brookes and Scott Farquhar and Atlassian back sort of 15 years ago. I think that those guys I find very inspiring. I think lots of kind of entrepreneurs and other people like that who'd built successful businesses, that's sort of the people I loved reading about their journeys and learning from that and hopefully trying to emulate some of that.
Mm. And you mentioned earlier about this entrepreneurial spirit. How did that connect with high school? Like what kind of kid were you in school? Because I kind of look at me and I go, I didn't really fit in because I wasn't that academic, book smart sort of kid. I wanted to try different things And as you know, the schooling system sometimes doesn't encourage that. So how did you fit into that? Like how would your teachers describe you now if you speak to them now about Mike as growing up?
Yeah, I probably didn't. I certainly didn't love high school and maybe for similar reasons to you that I didn't quite fit in. Like I went to a kind of all boys private school in Brisbane that was very much kind of focused on sport. Like sport was the kind of, if you're good at sport, you fit in. And if you didn't love sport, particularly rugby and rowing, you didn't quite fit in as well.
Yeah.
I did enjoy playing sport, but it wasn't my kind of true passion. There wasn't really anything entrepreneurial or any opportunities to be entrepreneurial in high school. So it's not something that I guess I could have been entrepreneurial and tried to do it myself, but there also wasn't really the kind of inspiration or anything, so I didn't really pursue that. So, I mean, I was quite academic and did debating and a few other things like that at high school, but it was really when I went to university that, I really loved university, and that's sort of, I studied commerce law at the University of Queensland, and that's where I really kind of found myself, I guess, and started exploring kind of entrepreneurial things with the different clubs and societies at uni, and I think that's what I really love that.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because a lot of the listeners of this podcast are fairly young in their life, and I think one of the pressures society is when you're in high school, you kind of have to have it figured out, and you have to be that A+ student. And I think it sounds like from what you're saying, you weren't. I definitely wasn't, and I think at that age, you can sort of be pressured by it. But looking back, it sort of doesn't mean much. So it's nice to hear that you weren't this perfect kid growing up.
Definitely. I mean, high school I did do well academically. Then when I went to university, that kind of flipped. I passed academically and I did reasonably well, but certainly nowhere near the top. Totally in my experience, what you say makes sense.
And then if you fast forward to when you were 16, 17, when you've got some awareness of the world, right? What was success to you at that age?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, with the benefit of hindsight, I really had no idea. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I...
Like, did you want to follow your dad and be a mining engineer as well? Was that a passion?
No, the thing I enjoyed most at high school was debating. So I guess that's what kind of led me into studying law. Law ended up not being I worked briefly as a lawyer after I finished university, and that definitely wasn't the career for me. So, the debating and legal side, that was kind of what interested me in high school. That's kind of what I pursued through uni, but ultimately, wasn't what I enjoyed doing in the end. It took me a long time to figure that out, really.
Yeah, and it's probably a good time to talk about magic moments, and I think this is probably the segment the listeners enjoy the most, because we really understand you kind of behind the scenes, some of those painful learnings, people you've met along the way, some of the experiences you've had. And I know you've spoken publicly about various experiences in life and work. Is there one painful learning that stands out for you in life, whether it's personal or professional, that you learned the most from?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the biggest learning and most painful learning I had was sort of Shoes of Prey and sort of ultimately having to close that business down and sell the assets after working 10 years on that business. Learned a massive amount from it, but a good couple of years of fairly painful couple of years towards the end of that.
And I know you've spoken a lot about Choose a Prey, so I won't go into it again. I'll direct the listeners to listen to the other interviews you've done. But the question I would ask out of that is, what was that moment, and perhaps not a magic moment, but what was that one moment that gave you the confirmation that it's time to move on from the business? Was it a conversation or was it a metric? Like, when did you know in your own mind you're like, okay, this is not going to work out long term?
Yeah, I'd say probably 8 or 9 years into the business, we had operationally executed really well on. So the business did custom women's shoes. So you could go online, design your own shoes. We'd executed operationally really well. We'd built a shoe factory in China, developed all the unique processes to make shoes one at a time really efficiently. We were delivering the value proposition to the customer, which we thought would resonate. But sales just weren't really expanding, or just weren't expanding at the rate that we had expected them to. And it was that realization that, okay, we've delivered this value proposition. The mass market fashion consumer actually doesn't want this. This business is, we've got our market research wrong, and this is not going to work out long term. I think that was the moment.
And I think the other side to that is, and a number of guests in the show have spoken about, like, having a coach or having that kind of advisor guides you through life, but then going through that experience, you kind of, that goes to the next level, right? How did you deal with the mental side? I mean, the story, it's kind of out in the public, but the mental side, because you kind of question your own abilities and you question if you have the capacity. And I know you had some time off and you reflected and you've obviously come back now in a strong way. But in the moment itself, like, did you have a coach or an advisor? Or was there someone in your family unit that you could have those tough personal conversations with?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. There are probably a couple of people. So, Katrine, my wife, lots of conversations with her through that period. And I think she and those conversations helped to keep me, sort of sane through it all. Actually, yeah, also lots of conversations with my mum. Those were really helpful. And then also with my one of my Shoes of Prey co-founders, Jody, who's also happens to be my ex-wife. We kept working together after breaking up in our personal life. We kept working together for another sort of 6 years on Shoes of Prey together. And, yeah, going through that journey together of, ultimately closing down the business, I think we were, I got a lot of support from her, and I think she did back from me too. So I'd say those are probably the three key people for me through that. And actually probably our Chief Operating Officer, Chris McCallum. He was very supportive and helpful from a kind of logical, rational point of view through all of that too. So, yeah, not one individual person, but I'd say those four were the biggest where I got the most help and support from.
Mm. And the other side is the pathway into Shoes of Prey, right? You touched on it earlier where you did law, and I know you post that you went into tech for a little bit, and then you did the graduate program at Super Retail Group, which is a large retail company here in Australia. How do you think now, looking back, did that give you the grounding to be able to have some understanding when you created Choose a Prey? And the reason I ask this is because a lot of listeners in this podcast, perhaps they're at uni and they want to start a venture, or they're similar to you, are in a corporate job and they've been there for a couple of years and they want to transition across. And it's a big step either way, whether you go from uni into starting something or transitioning from a safe paid salary to having no salary, right? How do you look back on that in hindsight? Did that different experiences and then your passion for retail give you the confidence that, okay, you can start a business? Like, what was that moment that gave you the belief in those first couple of years post-uni that, okay, I can actually build this business, or I can try and build it?
Yeah. I don't know if it's kind of just irrational optimism that's kind of built into me, but I think a very optimistic.
Kind of has to be naive, right?
Yeah, exactly. Irrational, naive optimism. I think that's probably it. I guess I think I probably just had the self-confidence that I could have a go at doing it. That certainly took a hit when Shoes of Prey didn't work out. But yeah, I think that's always sort of been built into me. Another thought that might be helpful for your listeners, very related to what you're asking there. Like if I rewound kind of 15, 20 years at the start of my career, and what would I spend time doing if my end goal was to start a business? I would optimize for the rate of learning. So I think in a couple of my early jobs, like the first year, well, probably the first few months working as a lawyer, my first job out of uni, super high rate of learning just because it's my first full-time job, but then the learning slowed down. I found it boring and wanted to leave and do something else. Super cheap auto, as you touched on, I spent 2 years there. I'd say the first year, really high rate of learning working in retail. But then the second year, the rate of learning dropped off. And then, yeah, worked for Google for 2.5 years. I think high rate of learning for the first 18 months, and then that dropped off for the year after that. Whereas Shoes of Prey and now Fable, insanely high rate of learning through all of that, probably a couple of times higher than anything I had working for, the rate of learning that I had working for other people. So I think I'd encourage people, if people do really want to start a business and be an entrepreneur, I think just throwing yourself in the deep end and doing it is probably the best way to go, because in my experience, the rate of learning is higher doing that than working in a big corporate, or go and work for a startup. Get a role where you're exposed to lots of different things. I think I have not done that myself, but employing people who are doing that in Shoes of Prey and Fable, I think they have had pretty insane high rates of learning. So I think that would be the other way to do it. Get a job in a startup or start a startup yourself.
I think that falls in with some of the best advice I've got, is just have a go, right? I think a lot of people can be sitting and ideating and trying to find this perfect idea, but then you haven't actually started anything. It's on paper.
And optimizing for high rate of learning, I think, is the biggest thing. Like talking to, whenever I chat to Mike Cannon-Brooks from Atlassian, like he has built an incredible business. He and Scott did that straight out of uni. He's basically had, 25 years of an insanely high rate of learning, 20, 25 years, however long they've been doing Atlassian now. And talking to him it's like he's lived 4 or 5 careers. He's got really helpful, deep experience-backed advice on pretty much anything you can go and talk to him about. So I think it's because he's thrown himself in the deep end and been on a steep learning curve for his entire career that he's been able to build that. So I think that's a good example of something to try and aspire to.
Absolutely. Big fan of both Mike and Scott. And they've, I think, put Australia on the map, frankly. Now, I'm keen to talk about probably two aspects. One is systems and routines, and the other one's people. And the reason I say that is because I think through your journey, I assume those are two things that have kind of been constant, right? Given the painful learnings you've had, and now you've to go from kind of closing down a startup, taking time off and rebuilding again, not just yourself, but a new business, right? You kind of need both those things to work. So maybe the first question there is around people, if we start with that. I think one, when you choose a prey, like, what did you learn about motivating people and getting the best talent on board? And two, how did you manage to keep people's trust after having to close down the business? Like, were there any practical learnings there that you did? Maybe it was just having open conversations that you learned about building trust and keeping that trust, because I'm sure human nature kind of goes, if this didn't work out, if I'm going to support him again, what if we have deja vu again, right? Being very blunt. So how have you done those two things, like first getting talent on board at Choose a Prey and now at Fable in a co-founder capacity or an employee capacity, and then building that trust and keeping it ongoing?
Yeah, good questions. On the first bit around attracting people, I guess one way, co-founders and I guess early hires, one thing I've found has worked well for me is really deeply understanding my own strengths and weaknesses. and then hiring or finding co-founders and hiring early people who complement my strengths and weaknesses. And that's definitely a skill I've learnt and honed over quite a long period of time. And then having worked with a lot of people quite closely at Shoes of Prey, four or five of our 13 people in Fable are ex-Shoes of Prey. The people I found in Shoes of Prey who complement my strengths and weaknesses well have come back on board. Come back on board and worked with me again in Fable. I think to your question of motivating people is also understanding their strengths and weaknesses, ideally putting them in roles that marry up with and allow them to sort of maximize what they're and make the best of their strengths, and then have people around them who kind of complement and can fill in for their weaknesses. That's what's worked really well, particularly with the people who I've worked with in both of those businesses. I think that's been a really good fit both ways.
Mm. And then, great insights there. Thank you. And then the other part is this probably goes back to Shoes of Prey, like when you were in that phase of winding the business down. Like how did you maintain trust with employees and then keep that trust? I'm sure you probably want to bring some of those people on into Fable because you've got that trust relationship, right? And you've been through some really dark moments together. But how did you do that? Because I think that can be very challenging because relationships can get burnt through that, right? Like how did you keep it authentic and keep it personable?
Yeah, I think open and transparent communication the whole way through was by far the most important thing there. Like our team, and actually the same applies to our investors in Shoes of Prey, but for both our team and our investors in Shoes of Prey, we were very kind of open with what the strategy was, what we were trying to achieve. They were all on board with that. The reason it didn't work out is, it wasn't, if it was like fraud or, something crazy like that, would be a completely different story. But the reason it didn't work out is, we just got our market research wrong. We didn't understand the consumer properly. You know, we did well in this beachhead niche of customers who were passionate about designing their own shoes, but that didn't translate into the mass market. We weren't able to kind of cross the chasm into the mass market. We thought we could. Our market research had initially said that would work, but ultimately that was wrong, and that's why the business didn't work out. So we were open and transparent with what the strategy was. Everyone could see the reasons why the business didn't work out. And I think, no one kind of places blame on anyone for that. There are things we could have done better, but everyone can sort of see that I've certainly learned from those experiences and will not be making the same mistake again. So I think everyone has seen that. So that's meant that, some of our Shoes of Prey team have come on to Fable and our main investors in Fable are ex-Shoes of Prey investors as well.
Mm. Yeah, I love how you've kind of flipped. Like people talk about building in public, you kind of failed in public, and it probably gives you a added level of credibility, right? Because people go, he does what he says. That's fantastic. Yeah. Now, the other one I'm curious to talk to you about is systems and routines, right? And I'll be specific what I mean by that. The period after Shoes of Prey, right? And I know you've spoken about you took time off, you traveled a bit, and that's where your love for food and plant-based meat came from. We'll get into that. But tell me about the first 3 months after you finish Shoes of Prey. So it's all done, paperwork signed, chapter closed, you've handed back the keys, so to speak. What were some of the first things you did, like in your mind, and I know how you got hindsight now, but what were some of the first things you did? Because that period is probably the hardest, right? You can really break apart and fall away because you kind of, you've had those conversations, you've closed them off, people kind of go, okay, keep in touch, and the ball's in your court. What were those 3 months like when everything was said and done with Shoes of Prey? What were some of the things you did and how did you kind of build a routine then?
Good question. So our first child, Elliot, had been born about a year before Shoes of Prey kind of closed up. And then we were pregnant with our daughter, Asta, as I left Shoes of Prey. So I think in many ways that was really helpful because it gave me something else to kind of focus on that wasn't the business, and also just helped me realize, like, in the context of life, My wife was happy and healthy. My kid, Elliot, was happy and healthy. Our unborn daughter at the time, Asta, was happy and healthy. And, you know, that's like 100 times more important than what I was going through professionally. You know, it may not have, it didn't always emotionally feel like that in a lot of moments, but, you know, stepping back rationally, reflecting on that, you'd rate that as like 100 times more important than what's going on professionally. So I think just a lot of time reflecting on that really helped in that sort of 3 month period after we finished up with Shoes of Prey. And I think also just being in a geographically different location during that period helped. So my visa was tied to Shoes of Prey. So I was living in Los Angeles in the US. So we had to leave the US because within sort of 30 days of finishing up with Shoes of Prey because the visa was expiring. So that created a little bit of stress because we also had to figure out where we were. We were losing health insurance in the US and Katrine wasn't Australian. So we basically had to go to Denmark to have our daughter. So that created a bit of stress, but actually it was really good. We went and lived in Denmark for 6 months. It's something that we'd always kind of wanted to do at some point in our lives. And just being in that different environment, just completely changing routines day to day, just different physical space, hanging around with different people, going and catching up with friends in Denmark who Katrine had grown up with. That was just a really, it was actually a really awesome experience and just really helped to, you know, I guess maybe more quickly close the, at least the emotional sort of chapter on Shoes of Prey and move on and start to think about moving on. And I also in that period didn't put pressure on myself to think about what I was going to do next. I think I wasn't ready. You know, I was a bit burnt out and I needed a break. And so, you know, for the first time in 10 years, just having time out to just read books and played computer games and just did stuff that I hadn't really done for a long time, just and spent time with Elliot, my son. It was, I think, all of those things, just completely breaking up the routine and taking out all the stress. That was awesome.
I think it's very practical advice for listeners, because I think the biggest thing there is you kind of have to put your ego aside, right, and not try and go, I've got to prove to the world I can actually do this, but just put it aside and have a refresh, as you call it. So yeah, I think anyone who's in that phase, hopefully they can apply that. And you've actually answered one of the questions Nick Crocker gave me, was how's being a father sort of grown you? And I think you've touched on that through that experience. So I won't ask that again. And then obviously you went on and long story short, you went and started Fable, which is the alternative meat plant-based company. Hopefully I'm saying it correctly. I know you say it a lot better than I just have. There's a couple of questions there. And one actually Nick's wanting to ask is, so he says that you live and breathe Fable's mission, and I think that's evident by even your cap. I mean, I see any picture of you on LinkedIn, you're wearing that cap at every event, so it's great. What's it like to lead a company when there's so much alignment there?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's an interesting one to reflect on, because Shoes of Prey, I didn't really have that. Like, we did custom women's shoes. I didn't wear the product. I wasn't particularly that into fashion. Like, I wouldn't wake up on a Saturday morning wanting to read fashion magazines. Whereas Fable for me is the complete opposite. I went vegetarian 6 years ago, and I'm vegan earlier this year for kind of ethical, environmental, health reasons. So I was kind of in this space just personally well before starting the business, and then it was kind of those same reasons, those ethical, environmental, health reasons that prompted me to want to do this. I'm also incredibly healthy eater. Like, try to eat a really minimally processed whole food based diet. We touched on at the start, growing veggies and have fruit trees and things on the property. I very much, my personal life is very much wrapped up in this space. Having that align with my professional life, it's like, I often reflect on if Shoes of Prey had have been a success and money didn't matter to me anymore, I can't think of anything that I would rather be doing than what I'm doing now. It's kind of a double win that this is, such a exciting thing to do personally. And is also, there is a really good market opportunity here.
Oh, you're making very many people jealous by making that comment that you're doing it. Even if you had money, you'd still do it. That's the best place to be, right? So that's fantastic. And tell us about the 41-acre property, because I think I asked you prior, is there anything you haven't really publicly spoken about? And I think that was one of the things you mentioned, that it's kind of new news, so to speak. And I know on Instagram you post about it quite a bit. So if anyone's interested, go follow Michael on Instagram. Tell me about that. Like, how did that start, and what's, where does that fit into your priorities in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, so actually in that 6 months that I had off, I just read a lot of books and just went wherever my intellectual curiosity took me. And there were two areas that I got quite interested in and excited about. One was the kind of ending industrial animal agriculture and the meat alternative space. The other one was kind of more communal and social living. Like, I think it's very strange in our society. As humans, we evolved living in kind of small community groups of between sort of 10 and maybe 30 or 40 people. And particularly having kids, you just see how that is how we are kind of designed to live. Like, if we're at home on the weekend with my wife and I and Elliot and Asta, the kids kind of get bored. So we've got to kind of try and entertain them the whole time, or they get bored and frustrated. Whereas if we have friends around who also have young kids, the kids go off and play together. They have a great time. The adults can hang out, catch up, and have a great time. And you can just clearly see that that small family unit is not necessarily how we were structured to live. So I explored second to that, there's a pretty big issue in our society around kind of loneliness and depression. It's kind of strange that so many people live in apartments, like literally apart from each other. I've lived in apartments before where I didn't know the people who lived on the other side of the wall to me. And that's kind of what, actually, when you reflect on it, is kind of very strange. I read a bunch of books and research around how, the ways that we're living, the average household is becoming smaller and smaller over time. Houses get renovated and people put up 8-foot concrete fences with alarm systems and different things. So, whereas houses used to just not even have a fence between them, kids could run, across the backyards, that kind of thing. Society is going in a direction with the way that we live that I think is not necessarily the good and the right way to go. So I sort of explored whether there could be like a startup market, something I was very passionate about. Is there some kind of startup market opportunity in that space? And I couldn't really come up with a business model that worked. So in my professional life, I ended up going down the path of starting Fable, doing meat alternatives. But in my personal life, still quite interested in this more kind of social communal living type structure. So that prompted my wife Katrine and I to buy this 41-acre property on the Sunshine Coast. We've been getting to know all of our neighbours in this area, and I think living slightly more remotely than big cities, there is just sort of a friendlier vibe. I think just because there's less people around, so we've gotten to know all our neighbours really well. We're just kind of working through and exploring ways that we can potentially even have other people sort of live on the property or come and visit the property more regularly. We're going to build some cabins on the property so that we can maybe kind of host events and host people here and just try to create a more sort of social communal type living environment. Not going sort of full commune. I think I've had experiences living with flatmates and things like that, and I think I'd still want the family unit space, like having our own kind of house, but maybe having other people who live close nearby doing dinners together one or two nights a week, just catching up more socially in a kind of doing veggie gardens and things like that together. I think it's that kind of thing that I'm interested in doing personally. I don't have a lot of time to explore that whilst doing Fable full time, but we kind of do a little bit of that on the evenings and weekends, just exploring that space, and it's fun.
Sounds very wholesome and very natural. And I think that's where Nick's question probably comes from, around alignment, because there's a lot of alignment there between your hobbies and interests and what you do for a job, so to speak. So now let's touch on Fable for a little bit before we got a final sprint. And I know you've talked a lot about the mission, and I mean, in today's world, it's evident. I'm a classic example. I am slowly turning to a non-meat diet, and I see the benefits, and I'm really glad I have got into it, thanks to people like yourself with Fable having really delicious products. And I mean that. What's something that, like, if you could have a microphone and you could speak to the world or you could speak to governments, what's something you'd want to share about the work you do that you've learned that people either don't know or people don't believe?
Yeah, I think industrial animal agriculture, it's actually quite insane what we, on multiple levels, what we do in that space. So one of the thing that sort of prompted me to go vegetarian and ultimately prompted me to go vegan was just doing a little thought exercise around, you know, we, as growing up, we had a pet dog and Nikki, a little beagle. And, you know, we absolutely loved that dog. She, you know, she lived till she was 15 years old. If she ever got sick, we took her to the vet, take her for walks each day, fed her like really good, healthy food, and treated this dog, Nikki, like, you know, like she was part of the family. Take pigs. There's a whole bunch of studies done on the intelligence of pigs. Pigs are arguably more intelligent than most, if not all, breeds of dog. You know, they're incredibly Wow. smart, social animals. And we, the way we treat pigs is just completely different to how we treat dogs. You know, if we caught up in person and I put a had a party, we had a party in the backyard, and I put a dog on a spit, like, you would rightfully freak out and go, "What the hell are you doing, Michael? This is crazy." You would leave yeah. and probably call the police, and I'm pretty sure there'd be laws against that, and I'd be in trouble. But if I put a pig on the spit in the backyard, that would be, you know, seen as normal. Or if we went to the supermarket and bought some pork, that would be seen as normal. And there's no kind of logical, rational reason for that. The reason is that we see dogs as cute and cuddly, and we see kind of pigs have got this reputation for being sort of dirty, and we don't really relate to pigs as easily. But that should have no bearing on how we treat a, you know, conscious, intelligent, social being. And instead, you know, there's a documentary called Dominion, which is freely available on YouTube, and it's a very painful thing to watch, but I'd encourage people to watch it. It shows how we treat pigs and other animals in industrial animal agriculture in Australia, and it's it just makes no sense how we treat pigs and dogs so differently. You know, yeah, so that was the big one for me ethically. On the agricultural and sustainability front, industrial animal agriculture is responsible for 14.5% of global greenhouse gas emissions, and that's because animals are an incredibly inefficient way to produce food. So take a pig again as an example. You need to feed a pig 8 kilograms of plants to produce 1 kilogram of meat. A cow is actually 12 to 1. They've got to eat 12 kilograms of plants to produce 1 kilogram of beef. And so this stat blew my mind. Most of the crops that are grown around the world, more than half the crops are grown around the world, are actually fed to animals, which then humans eat. So, you know, people get concerned about the Amazon being deforested to grow soybeans, and they think, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't drink soy milk or eat tofu. But it's like 75% of the world's soy is grown to feed pigs, rather than humans only eat 7% of the world's soy crop. So if we could, yet we get more calories globally from eating soy than we get from eating pork. So if we could just cut animals out of the food supply chain, we could return huge, vast amounts of land back to being forested. Those forests could capture all the carbon that we've emitted out in the atmosphere, and we could very, very quickly solve the global warming crisis. And then just on the health front, the World Health Organization has come out and said that beef is a class 2 probable carcinogen. Processed meat like sausages and bacon is a class 1 carcinogen. Bowel cancer is one of the biggest health issues in our Western societies, and that's because people don't eat enough fiber. About 95% of Australians don't get the recommended daily amount of fiber in their diet. There's no fiber in meat, and we eat 110 kilograms of meat of land animals per person per year in Australia. So that's why we eat too much meat. That's why we're not getting enough fiber in our diets. Mm. If we switch to a plant-based diet, would solve all of these crazy ethical issues, would solve environmental issues, we could solve global warming pretty quickly, and we'd all be much healthier, live longer, and have a lot less disease in our society. I think people are starting to learn about these things, but I think it's kind of just in the backs of people's minds. So, I mean, if people are interested in this, yeah, on the ethical side, I'd point people to reading either reading Peter Singer's book, Animal Liberation, or watching the documentary Dominion, which is freely available on YouTube. On the health front, I'd encourage people to read a book called How Not to Die by Dr. Michael Gerber. That's got a whole bunch of really good research, academic literature on sort of eating animals versus eating plants and what the healthiest sort of diet is for people. And then on the environmental and sustainability side, probably reading some of the data on the FAO website, so the UN Food and Agricultural Organization. They've got a whole bunch of really good stats on lots of things, including the impact of industrial animal agriculture. That's a long answer
Thanks
to your question.
Thanks for sharing
question,
that. Yeah,
I absolutely
I can sense that. Super useful resources, and I'll include them in the show notes. And I think, yeah, super confronting stats there as well. And I must tell you, your fiber comment there actually motivated me to start checking my fiber intake. So I think I heard you talk about it on a podcast a few months ago. I forget which podcast it was, and you mentioned it. And I told a friend, I'm like, I heard Michael speak about this fiber comment, and it blew my mind. And he's like, really? We don't get fiber? I eat all these things, and now on every package product I buy, I look at the fiber content at the back, thanks to you. So yeah, I think really confronting, right? People think of kind of protein, fats, and carbs, and forget about the things that are equally, if not more important. So super interesting.
Yeah, there's this consumer perception around, you know, not getting enough protein in our diets. It's like 99%+ of Australians do get enough protein in their diet. So we've got this obsession with getting protein in our diet, but we all eat enough. You've basically got to be malnourished to not get enough protein in your diet. You know, maybe if you're going to the gym and doing strength training, you might need to optimize some more protein in your diet. But if you're not specifically doing strength training to build muscle at the gym, there's no point in eating more protein than what 99% of Australians eat, whereas 95% of Australians don't get enough fiber in their diet. So, and we don't really think about that. There's no real consumer perception around that. So we've got that piece very backwards.
I feel like we could almost have you back on for an education episode about these things. Right? There's so much, seriously, there's so much and so much you're working on. And the benefit here is you actually solving it and not just talking about it. I think that's a great thing that you're doing. Now, last one on Fable is we're sitting here recording this at the end of November in 2021. If I had to ask you at the end of November in 2022, what would kind of fulfill you in terms of success? What do you want to achieve in the next 12 months if you had to look back 12 months from now, looking back at this conversation?
Yeah, I think we would have the goal would be to 3x the impact that we have on helping cut meat out of people's diets. So we would have grown our kind of top line revenue number and the amount of plant-based meat that we've sold by 3 times, so that we can, you know, have made a 3x impact on helping people reduce their meat consumption and cutting more animals out of the whole food supply chain. That would probably be the biggest thing. And then I think the second piece for us is around just more education and awareness of the health benefits of mushrooms. Mushrooms are an incredibly amazing food. They are high in fiber. They're also quite high in protein. And they've, you know, been used in traditional Chinese medicine for thousands of years. Shiitake mushrooms are one of the core ingredients in traditional Chinese medicine. They contain a lot of the vitamins and minerals that our bodies need, and particularly a lot that are in animal products, that, you know, things like vitamin B12 and vitamin D and iron and things that can be a bit harder to get in plants. Mushrooms and fungi are a different kingdom. There's the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, and the fungi kingdom. So fungi are really high in some of those areas. Yet in Australia, we eat 110 kilograms of plants per person per year, and we only eat 4.5 kilograms of mushrooms per person per year. So if we can help educate people on the amazing health benefits of mushrooms and, you know, help show people how to cook mushrooms in more creative, interesting ways to make them more delicious, that would be the other thing. So yeah, we'd love to grow the Fable business 3 times and have educated, tens of thousands of more people on the benefits of mushrooms.
I'm super excited. super excited, and you've definitely got me as a customer on board. I'm actually having Fable for dinner. I can see my kitchen in front of me, and I'm like, I need to get there. We're recording this around dinner time for listeners reference. And okay, time for the final sprint, Michael. Just some rapid fire questions, and hopefully you can give me 60-second answers. What's one investment that you've made in your life that you consider the best? And it doesn't have to be financial.
I'd say going vegan and the investment in my health. Definitely have a lot more energy, which then helps make me more productive and, helps me to kind of achieve the goals I want to achieve in life. And all the science and data says I'll have a longer life expectancy for having done that. So, it was difficult cutting meat out of my diet 6 years ago, and then particularly cutting eggs and dairy out of my diet over the last 6 years, and cutting it out completely early this year. But I think the best investment I've made personally.
I agree. I'm already seeing my energy levels better since I only eat plant-based a couple of days a week. So completely agree. What's one thing you want to learn in the next 6 months?
I'd say learning more about scaling a business internationally. So we did that with Shoes of Prey, but weren't able to kind of cross the chasm into the mass market. So learning more about scaling a business into international markets and into kind of the mass market food consumers. I'd say that on the professional side. Then on the personal side, keen to learn more about want to grow more vegetables and more different fruit trees on our property. We've got a lot of wild mushrooms that are growing here. Also keen to learn more about cultivating my own mushrooms.
Love it. And last one, is there one person or quote that inspires you?
I'd say I'm at the moment probably most inspired by, and this is fairly cliched, but Elon Musk. He is, it's cliched, but I think he's doing an incredible job of building multiple, it's hard enough building one business, building multiple businesses, first of all. Secondly, very, very mission-driven. Thirdly, sort of doesn't kind of focus or care about what other people think, just thinks from first principles, thinks rationally and pursues that. And he doesn't always get everything right, but I think it's incredible what he's doing. And if more people in the world took that approach to their professional lives, I think the world will be a much better place, and I think a lot of people are, which is great.
And hopefully we can see plant-based diets on Mars one day, right?
So that'd be amazing. Nice. Good combo.
Well, that's the finish line, Michael. Thank you so much for coming on, and absolutely love the mission you're on. I think not just the work you do, but I think the way you go about it is really inspiring. Everyone I speak to speaks very well about you. And for listeners, if you haven't tried Fable, get out to your nearest supermarket in Australia, and I'm sure you're soon going to be in other parts of the world, and try the product. It tastes just like a meat product. It is crunchy. It is delicious. Like, it's really good. So thank you again.
Thanks, Fit. I really appreciate it. And love what you're doing with this podcast too. I think it's awesome. Thanks so much.
I hope you took away some actionable insights and learnings from this conversation to apply to your lives and be 1% better every day. And I look forward to sharing the next episode with you next Tuesday. Stay tuned.